And welcome to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN LP 106.9 Salida. And we have another fine guest lined up today. And I want to mention the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And I'm hearing a hum in here somewhere. Okay, and the programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info, and I finally located somebody to help me with the archives to get them backed up and up to date. So that's great, because we've got a lot of years. We go back about 5 years on those archives. So anybody that's interested would know. There's a lot of different people that I've had interviews with, and so I'm adding another great guest tonight, and this is Greg Anthony. Hi, Greg.
Oh, how are you today? How are you?
Fine. Let me go ahead and say that Greg is first and foremost a satirist, a writer, and a reporter. He's also reviving his stand-up comedy show. A SAG actor, Greg, in years gone by, appeared in bit parts in several sitcoms and less than successful movies. My stage name is Greg Anthony, and they think I'm Italian. Why? I want to be fair with other comics. I just don't want to get too many laughs just because I am Polish. You've been at it a long time, since the early 80s, with little worldly success. A long way you went to law school for what you term the fun of learning more nonsense in a world filled with a lot more. You put the JD behind your name, but has recently added a JA, standing for, I don't know if we want to go into that, in recognition of all the lies he has written about and believed in his life. Undaunted, he vows to continue observing even more and bigger lies since deciding to tackle the religious world. I am sure the Vatican will glorify me in sainthood for all the research I've done on their behalf. And your investigative journal radio show is produced by you and is broadcast. Now, are you on Orion still?
No, I'm over on First Amendment Radio now.
I go in there and I'm chasing you around a little bit at times. So,
yeah, I don't even know if I want to do them anymore, to be honest with you. I do it once a week now for a couple hours, but uh-huh. I've been doing it for... You know, I did a show daily for about 6 or 7 years.
Right.
And basically, you get to a point where you exhaust your material, in a sense. And at least I think I did. And because of I cover a real narrow area, which expands to a lot of different things. But since no one really covers the area that I cover, really... I harped on it for a long time, but get kind of tired doing it. Now I'm back once a week, so I kind of touch on it, the Vatican intrigue, along with some other things. But it's kind of one of my pet peeves is that if you look at – I came from a journalism, mainstream journalism, went to, college and became the editor of my student newspaper. And from there I worked in, mainstream newspapers, then going overseas and working. And when I came back, it was pretty obvious to me that, stories weren't getting covered properly. So, there was I didn't feel like I wanted to work in the newspaper business anymore. So when 9/11 came, I started to write again and get back into it, and then got exposed to the alternative media, which was new, the internet, things like that, and learned the hard way really what goes on in the alternative media. And the real truth of the matter is the story about the Vatican's real control of our country, and it seems like something far-fetched to people, but when you really want to get down to the players of the New World Order, you got to include them, and nobody does. I mean, not many people do on the bigger alternative shows. So I found that the same gatekeeper mentality is here. It's just disguised in the truth. And so I said to myself, no one, for example, if you're a 9/11 truth seeker, or if you're working on chemtrails and you're doing all these things, you know, although you're getting some, you know, you're getting some truth out there, it really the solutions will never come unless you expose really how this whole crazy system we created in America operates. And that includes the orchestrated wars and everything else. And so you got to kind of tie it together. And if you don't do that, it seems to be meaningless to me. For example, take 9/11. You can do all the research in the world and, I mean, come to the conclusion that the government story is a fraud. But do we really know how this thing, you know, is there anything ever going to happen outside of people saying, yeah, it is, but what can happen? And look at, you know, 10, 12 years later, 9/11 is on the back burner. People still realize, many people still realize that it's a fraud. But what has really come to what? Oh, Bush did it, you know. But that's really not what was going on. So that's my pet peeve, and that's why I covered the Vatican issue, because I integrate the spiritual aspect of this whole thing. And that's kind of what I do.
Well, you know, I really haven't gotten to the opportunity to cover this as much as I'd like to. But I'll tell you, even after, you know, the years that I've been at it, there's still aspects of this when I try to open up and look at all avenues that it still confuses me. And even though I do realize that, I mean, if you got control freaks running the world, you know they're in everything. So So as a matter of which mask am I looking at here, and I can find evidence in all directions. So it's not easy for me, and that's why I'm willing to look at all these different avenues, because we do need to be looking at all the avenues. So, but I can't really put, you know, one wants to put the blame one place and one wants to put the blame another place, but, you know,
what I'm getting at is all avenues or roads lead to Rome, and how you can begin to do it, research it, is to look at what's happened. Just go back to the beginning of our country and start looking at things in a world perspective, what was going on during that period of time. And the story that's been sold to us in our history books is completely speculative, I think. It's up for debate, big debate. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to discuss it, because behind the scenes, we have a whole different thing going on. And once you start realizing all of the different connections that Rome had to our country even back then, then you begin to understand the real why America was formed and what the real reason was. And it wasn't for freedom and freedom of religion and all that, although that's what they tell us. It was for just the opposite. And that's how the elite, and I put the elite category and spiritual elite, the power brokers who work with them. Politicians basically are just the pawns here. They're the ones that carry out the little orders. They're not the big, you know, and they do their little number, and that's it. But behind the scenes, it isn't just the elite bankers and that. There is a network that has been in place for hundreds of years. And who better to know how to do this than the Vatican? Because if you look at their history, that's what they're really all about, intrigue. They're about taking over governments, controlling countries, using religion and money and power. And if we start really realizing that, then we won't be hoodwinked. And I'll tell you this right now, there's really only one solution here, and that is, there's a whole, and this doesn't sound like my bio is like, oh, Greg's a joke teller. Well, no. One of the things I wanted to do was to take this information and try to do it in a comedic manner in front of people, actually face to face. And it kind of works, you know, sometimes. Sometimes you don't get a laugh. But you can do it. And you kind of pick up where George Carlin left off, you know. I mean, that's, if you pick his brain before, you know, he just passed away a while back. But he was already to the doorstep of what I talk about. And if you can just step in there and look at some of his shows and see what he was really talking about. He was going to, I believe, if he'd have lived, he would have started getting closer to what I was talking about. And I'm sure that he's seen some of my work because I know he's very inquisitive. Now, the point I'm trying to get is when I first started to concentrate on, you know, saying, listen, let's talk about Rome's involvement in the overthrow of our country. Let's talk about their involvement in revolution. Let's talk about their involvement in how they talk out of both sides of their mouth and what their real political agenda is. And it offends a lot of Catholics, right? So you offend a lot of people and people don't like you. Now, what I found was the key to this whole story is when you get the information and you try to bring it out, what stations are going to carry it and do it honestly, and who's going to try to block it? And if you find out the people that try to block it, then you know where the gatekeepers probably lie. Because what happens is this story is so important, and all I ever mentioned was I think it needs open debate. I didn't go in and say, listen, I am a card-carrying Bible believer, or I'm a Jew, and I think I don't like the Vatican because they beheaded all these people. Well, of course you don't like them for doing that, but they did do that. So what happens is you can, through any time in any story, that I remember I was covering a story in Florida about some water problem, and it was polluted water and this new subdivision going up. Now, as soon as I realized the newspaper wasn't going to cover it or said forget about it, I realized that's probably where the real story lies. Who's behind it? Then you find out the publisher of the newspaper owned part of the development. So what I'm getting at is the things that aren't said are really where the truth lies in this story, because it's very complicated. It's not complicated. It's just hard to swallow. It's like saying, if I told somebody that, you know, our founding fathers are not Christian, maybe. They never were. And they had ties to Rome even back then. And there was an idea about this country that we don't even gather. But at the same time, all these stations on the internet are talking about secret societies and all this stuff, the double talk. But they don't want to go there. And the reason they don't want to go there, some people are just, they think, well, it's impossible. But the ones that really know don't want to go there because they're covering for them. And they know if they tell that story, they're going to lose all their money. They're going to lose all their stuff. So they cover everything else. Oh, let's do the whole, you know, gamut of conspiracy theories. And, you know, and all that's meant to do is really confuse people because there's just so much of it. You know, what do you believe, what don't you believe?
Okay, now, before you get too far into this, you might want to explain to the audience that, you did spend quite a bit of time over in Italy, right?
I lived there for 7 years, in Rome, so I learned a lot from firsthand knowledge there.
Okay.
And I went there not realizing, you know, I was just like anybody else. As a journalist, I thought Rome was, you know, this big, huge religious organization, but didn't realize how crooked they were until I was there and watched it firsthand and watched cardinals from America who ran the Vatican Bank up to their neck with the mafia and all this stuff and all these connections to the CIA in Rome and the plots of terrorism there in the time I lived there. So it was a scenario prior to, you know, America was still living in bliss in the 80s, you know. Still recovering, you know, still hanging on like we're the greatest country in the world. And I'm over there in Rome watching a whole different story. And, you know, I was there for some of the biggest one of the biggest scandals Rome was ever involved in, the Vatican Bank scandal, and I saw it firsthand. And at that point, I started to research this organization, and I found out they really speak out of both sides of their mouth. They tell the public one thing, you know, oh, we love Jesus, we love this, we want to bring unification to all Christians and all this stuff. On the second hand, they're up to their neck in financial fraud constantly. They're involved in banking up to their, you know, not banking, they're involved in money laundering up to their neck. The lawsuits they're involved with, not only overseas, but in America, are astounding, but they never get covered. So we hear this one side of it. We hear, oh, the pedophile story. We got some bad priests who like to play with boys, you know. Oh, but, you know, the Pope, somebody in the Vatican will clean that up. We've been overcome by evil spirits or something. So it gets a little bit nauseating when, you know, I tell people right up when I first started, I said, look, just look into their finances. Look into how they operate with the CIA and the mob and exactly what Georgetown over by in the Vatican and our country is all about. Then, you know, talk to me, because the rest of it is all, you know, to me, it really gets rid of the story, because what happens is, it's very simple. You do this story, you get isolated from the top alternative stations, which I was on, and then they spread lies about you. The only one that knows they were lies is me, and I can't prove that to anybody, so they know that, you know, they can just, discredit you like that. So that's my second key. When they were lying about me, so why would they lie if all they want to do is get to the truth? You know? And those stories still go around today. And that was basically to say he's out of his mind, you know, which Alex Jones said. You know, Greg's just crazy. He's nuts. Now, Alex Jones, to me, is one of the biggest gatekeepers we've ever seen. And I don't ever, you know, Jeff Rentz, John Stadmiller, the whole group of them, you know, you can put them all and just say, look, they're not going to give you the whole truth. And I know that firsthand because I worked with them. Now, what they can do to me is just say, what they do, they can just say, oh, he's out of his mind, or in fact, they spread rumors, somebody did over there, that I was working with the Mossad. You know, and then I had a military handler and all these things, you know. And so people actually believe that. You know, I was living in a small town in Colorado, and a couple guys were I was in the library, and a couple guys walked up to me, and they said, are you that guy that's with the Mossad living here? You know? and that's in a town of 3,000 people in Colorado, you know. So that's how the internet operates. I know it firsthand. Now, even if I say that, people will listen, oh, how do we know he's not intrigue, conspiracy, he could be a double agent. You know, God, I wish I was. I'd be living a lot better than I am now. But the point I'm trying to make is that once you discuss this story, and I'm talking about it generally now, once you start saying, listen, there's something here we're not getting, people go, well, why do you want to do that? Why? Why? Because you want to know who did it. You know, you can have all the 9/11 facts you want or all the facts about Kennedy, but you want to know who was behind it.
Right.
You know, and so I will give you, I don't know what your schedule is, but I will give you a couple really good facts to back up what I'm saying. But before I do that, let me say this generally so people understand. The natural progression of this story is first you go and you implicate and you talk about the Vatican and their roles here with both religion, spirituality, and governments. Then you look into their history. Then you move forward and you look at what our history is all about. Then you begin to find that your only supporters are Bible-believing Christians who have been labeled fundamentalists by most of the masses, right? Uh-huh. And these are certain people out there that are very adamant that understand the Vatican's role, but the Vatican and they, in turn, turn it into a spiritual argument. So outsiders, Muslims, Jews, people, New Agers, just normal people, you know, that have no religious affiliation or no spirituality, look at this as kind of a tug of war between, you know, God and demons. And they laugh because they don't believe in God and demons, okay? So I say to this, that's where you find the support. So what happened to me was then I got labeled a fundamental Christian and nobody would listen to me. But then I would start to say, listen, because all the other people would say, Greg, you criticize everything, but you don't criticize Christians. So what I did then is I started criticizing Christianity. I said, why not? I want to show these other people that I'm going to look at things from all points of view. So when I started looking at Christianity from a point of view of paganism and how even Bible believers have a really, you know, skewed view of things, they criticize. They don't like me then, you know. So you become like this journalist that goes, should I have ever done this story? I mean, who cares? And I will tell you something, if I have a minute here, because it's a great story.
Okay, well, before you get into it, let me just say I've got Greg Szymanski.
Oh, I thought it was Greg Anthony.
Oh, I'm sorry. You got me. I'm so used to seeing
No, don't do that, because then they'll say I have an alias.
I don't know. I've got Greg here.
Hey, listen, you know, you don't think that name gets me in trouble? I had to make a living, you know, so I used to, before I started, back in the 90s when I came back to the States, like I said, I didn't want to go back into journalism, so I got a yacht salesman's license in California to sell yachts. And, you know, so I renewed my license 2 years ago because I wanted to do it again, and I have a friend who's out of Marina Del Rey that knows me from the 90s. So I'm a salesman under his brokerage because you have to be licensed in California and then get a broker to sponsor you. But I wanted to get another one in the town I live in, of little south of L.A. And so this guy was going to hire me, and then he checked me out on the internet, and he said, listen, you're just too controversial. We can't have you on our staff, you know. So the point is, that name is kind of, you know, gets me in trouble sometimes when I want to live a normal life. So I do use Greg Anthony. That's my middle name when I do comedy clubs and stuff, because it just cuts down the...
Okay. All right.
Plus, nobody can pronounce my name anyway, so...
Okay, and I've got Greg Anthony here, and you're back on First Amendment Radio because it's something I was just reading where you were doing a blog, your own broadcast on your...
Oh, I do that too. Yeah, okay. I do my own stuff that I put on my website.
Okay, and that's...
But that is not live. That is basically... Normally what I'll do is I'll do a 10-minute monologue or a 5 minutes with Greg segment. And I find people like that because, you know... Sometimes they don't want to listen for an hour, so I give them like 5 minutes of some interesting stuff. So yeah, I do that. So I do it on myself, by myself.
Okay, and that's you type in Arctic Beacon and or Investigative Journal.
Yeah, no, you go to www.arcticbeacon.com.
Okay.
And you'll find my website, the Investigative Journal, and you can look at it.
Okay, now.
And I've been on, let me see, I started out, I was on GCN, RBN, then I went over to, I don't know what other, there's a few others there.
First Amendment
for a while because nobody else would have me on anymore because of the Vatican story, and they were a Christian station. Then I went to Orion, and I got a Saturday night time slot, and I could never make the show. It was just Saturday night's not the night I do radio, and I should have known it, so... I was just doing other things, so I kind of screwed up myself on that stage. And that wasn't the station's fault. It was my fault. I couldn't do it. So I said, well, I have an idea. I think I'll go on again. So I'd burned my bridge there because of my tardiness. I had a couple comedy things I had to do, and then I missed shows, and then something happened privately. So it kind of messed up. And then I was going to do a couple shows, and then I didn't show up, so finally the owner station said, "Ah, screw it," you know, and I said, "Screw it too." I don't blame them. So we don't. This is no bad. In fact, he really liked my show. It's just I couldn't do it Saturday night, and I should have probably said, "Well, why, you know, stupid me." I should have said, "Well, just put me on Sunday night," but I didn't think of that. I don't know what was going on.
Well, gee, you should go back to RBN since they've doubled up on their.
What's that?
I said you should go back to RBN now that they've doubled up on their programming now. So
RBN?
Yeah.
What do you mean doubled up?
Well, they've got two. They got Studio A and Studio B. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I don't. To me and John. I went to Austin for a while. In fact, I live. John Stamler let me live in his house for a couple of weeks when I first moved to Austin because I was doing the show right out of the studio there. And then I got my own place. And then I got on GCN, and I was one of the few guys that was on GCN and RBN at the same time. I was doing about 3 or 4 hours a day, and I was then I started concentrating on the Vatican. And then John gave me an ultimatum, basically. He said, get off GCN. Don't talk about the Vatican all the time, and you can stay. But I said, screw you, so I didn't. So basically, that's what happened there.
Okay, now if we go back to where I interrupted you a few minutes ago, you were getting into the Vatican and the...
Oh, okay. Well, here, when I was in there, there was a huge story about the Vatican Bank scandal. It was involved, one of the big players was a Cardinal Paul Marcinkus, who was out of Chicago. He was the bishop of my hometown, Chicago, and he was the head of the Vatican Bank, used to be the Pope's bodyguard. His nickname in Freemasonry is Gorilla, you know, and it's supposedly, there's no priests in Freemasonry. Well, that's a lie, because the Italian and French press had printed stories proving that over 100 of the top bishops in Europe and America were involved in Freemasonry, you know, and that supposedly is a canon law violation where you're excommunicated. But apparently, you know, the Vatican was just trying to cover up the bad press. But that story never got over here. In fact, I tried to write it for AP and they wouldn't accept it. But it's in the Italian and French papers. It's okay if French and Italians read about that. So Marcinkus gets involved in this big scandal. He's involved in maybe a murder of this bank president and just a huge amount of money stolen and all this stuff. And he gets indicted by the Italian government, and then the Vatican pays $250 million to drop the case, so there's a little corruption going on there too. In the meantime, I'm trying to interview him because he's from my hometown, and I find out he gets flown out by the American military to a little monastery in Arizona, Phoenix. So, you know, fast forward, you know, to 2000 and whatever, and the Italian, I talked about this story a number of times, driving home to people the corruption, who this guy was, and started, you know, really talking about who he works with here in the States and all his connections with the CIA and what they're really about. And so he was still alive. He was an old man living in a monastery in Phoenix. Okay, they just wanted him out of the picture, so they put him up to in this archdiocese in Phoenix, not a monastery. So while the Italian government is reviving the investigation of murder again, so they're at the same time that I was going to try to get an interview with him, here's what happens. I'm doing shows now, and I think I still was on GCN, so it got pretty good coverage. One night I got a call from a guy named Alfred Holden, and Alfred lived in Idaho or something, and told, you know, and said, I'm Father Marcinkus' godson. And, you know, Greg, you shouldn't be doing these stories about the Vatican. It's not going to get you anywhere. You know, you have a really nice voice. Why don't you go into entertainment? You know. And by the way, my uncle was a patsy, and he really isn't the bad guy you're talking about. And, you know, I just wanted you to know that. And he was a very, very, very well-spoken man, very educated. So here we got the inside guys trying to convince me this is, you know, to get me off the track. And he would say stuff like, Greg, if you stop this Vatican stuff, you know, we can probably find you a really nice paying job somewhere. You know, I'm not saying I can, he says, but I'm saying, you know, you could go on, and you were a DJ once, you know, that'd be good stuff, you know. So here I said, well, listen, Alfred, I don't know, you know, let's just say this. Let's say, I said, oh, by the way, he says, I know that Father, you know, my uncle, Cardinal Marcinkus, listens to your show, and he reads your website, but he's an old man now. And I said, well, by the way, why don't we do this? Let's just let me get an interview with him. I'll do it. You know, I'll go down there, and I'll tape everything, but I won't do anything. I won't print anything until, you know, he's going to tell, just have him clear his name. And I'll wait for you to tell me when you want me to publish it. I'll keep it private until maybe he's gone. You know, he's an old man, or you tell me you want it. But we got it on record of who the real, if he was a patsy, who were the other people. And we can clear his name. Okay, let me interview him. And he says, well, I'll ask him, but he's old, and I don't know if he can. At the same time, I find out the Italian press, I turn on the news, and they're down there in Phoenix chasing him around trying to get interviews with him, you know, because they didn't open the investigation in Rome again on the murder of a president of a bank of Ambrosiano named Roberto Calvi, who was found dead under the Blackfriars Bridge, hung under the Blackfriars Bridge in London, because he knew too much and he was going to rat on the Vatican and the mob and everybody. So what happens is, And he says, I'll call you. I'll call you and let you know. So I said, okay. About 10 days later, I'm reading the newspaper, and I read this story. Oh, Father Marcinkus was died yesterday of an apparent heart attack in his bed. So 10 days later, he's dead, you know. Now, is it a coincidence? The Italian press was on him. There was more, you know, I was trying to get an interview with him. I don't know. He could have died of a heart attack. Or they could have slipped something in, you know, they could have slipped something in his drink and said, that's enough. We don't want him talking anymore. He's old, you know. And that's been done before. In fact, it was done with the Pope before John Paul II. And that's another interesting story and people that I interviewed here in America, plus in Rome, who can prove that he was killed. And that's another story which gets involved with, you know, big players here, both political, with money, banker, you know, businessmen, as well as at that time Cardinal. No, was Spellman still alive? I can't remember.
You know,
might not have been, but anyway.
So if they're willing to off each other in the Vatican, then, you know, they're doing that in all these other elite groups, you know, anywhere you're...
of course.
Yeah. So none of... I mean, you'd think that it would finally get through to them that maybe this isn't the way to go, but then again, or do they just figure they're buying some extra time and they can live well before they do get offed? I don't...
Well, it's just like anything. There's no loyalty among thieves. So it basically, you either keep your mouth shut or that's the end, you know, and that's as simple as that. Or you play ball with us or forget about it. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, nobody, what do you think happened to Kennedy? I mean, the same thing. I mean, Kennedy's ties to the Vatican were very, you know, his father Joe, you know, without Joe's support, Kennedy would have never got in, and Joe's was a crook connected to them. And when Kennedy got in and began to backstab the Vatican, that's when they killed him. And the blessings come down, you know, okay, he's got to go no matter what, you know, and that's what I'm talking about. If Kennedy would have played the game, didn't want to change the Federal Reserve banking system, little announced to anybody, Kennedy would not allow Cardinal Spellman. If anybody remembers the Vietnam War, there's so many wars here. Everybody, you know, the Iraqi War is the longest war we've ever been in. But
you know what?
If anybody remembers Vietnam War, it was called Spelly's War, and Cardinal Spellman, the most powerful man in this country, and I say that. Not from just hearsay, but from, you know, even cops in New York that were investigating him tell you the real truth about Spellman. Kennedy would not allow him in the White House. And that pissed. When you don't allow the most powerful man in our country into the White House, Kennedy was really, threading. He was walking on...
Particularly being of the same religious affiliation would have been, you know, pretty interesting slap in the face, right?
Oh, yeah. That religious affiliation is just front. I mean, for the Vatican, they don't care. I mean, look, the Vatican has, this is what pisses off a lot of Christians. And I keep telling them, that library they have there under lock and key, it's guarded more than Fort Knox. Can open up a can of worms regarding Christianity as well. And the Vatican knows that. And they know they keep secrets. And they want this myth. If, for example, I'm not saying it is, but let's just say Jesus is a myth. And he wasn't really the Messiah and all the stuff that Christianity says. The Vatican would be very content, and I believe there are people that know that. Or they can show in records that they've kept that this was a whole different story going on. So what they do is they realize that if they let the truth out, they lose their control too, because what's the Vatican's key to power here? Jesus. The whole, you know, 1 billion strong who believe, you know, in their traditional Catholic ways and St. Peter and all, you know, all that garbage. But then the Christians fight over the Bible, and say the Vatican is traditional, we are the true Christians of Jesus, but they both follow the same thing. So the Vatican knows that. And think about it from their point of view. If the truth were known, just like a priest told me when I was in Rome, I said, what's in those? I said, what if Jesus did? He said, you know, if the people knew the truth, the world would be thrown into chaos, and the Vatican probably wouldn't be here. You know, and I said, yeah, you know. So the lie continues, and he just kind of sipped his wine, and I said, can I go down in there and read that stuff? And they go, oh, they kill you first, you know. And the point is, that's a whole story that needs to be discussed too. But nobody wants to get there because they're going to keep believing myths. Now, for example, I'm not saying it is. I mean, I don't mind person having faith and all that stuff. I'm just saying, let's look at some facts that haven't been talked about. And does that mean you're a devil? You know, and I've been called that by Christians. Oh, he must be controlled. Well, I was called that by the Vatican, too. They said I was controlled by the devil. That's why I talk against them, you know. Oh, my God. So they use that card, too, you know. When you're not on their side, you're on the devil's side. Then the Christians say, oh, if you're on the Vatican side, you're on the devil's side. So who the devil really knows? Although,
I love there was something.
Whether there is really a devil.
I love the, what was it, an article you had on your website or something like that. But if we're made in God's image, would we be invisible?
Yeah, now, I mean, all these little things, you know, it really ticks off Christians because, and they really, and you know, I'm not trying to tick them off. I'm trying to say, listen, as a journalist, you know, you got to be fair to every. I mean, if you're going to criticize the Muslims and you're going to criticize the Vatican and you're going to criticize Hindus like you guys do, then, you know, if I do that, if I don't criticize you, then I'm kind of leaving things, you know, I'm not saying I criticize you just to criticize, but I'm saying there's a lot of speculation going on here. There's a lot of things from a Muslim's point of view. Maybe they look at you differently. So let me look at you from just an objective point of view. And, you know, the Christians will go, oh, the Jews are okay in the Old Testament. But when we get to the New Testament, oh, that they just don't know, the pork Jews, you know. And I'm going, you know, the whole idea of, you know, there's a way to view God in a way that, you know, I've been thinking about it, and it's very interesting because there's always these arguments about time. You know, creationists go, oh, the Earth's 5,000 years old, and then evolutionists go, no, it's 450 million, and how was there God before the Big Bang? And no, well, the Big Bang, and then you start looking at the Big Bang, and you find scientific theories that contradict the Big Bang. And have different views, time and space, all this stuff. And one of the ones I like most is a guy that researched. He was a very traditional scientist, but he kind of got off the track and started looking at things differently. And he said, what if time doesn't exist? And when you think of it, you go, well, that's impossible because it's 3:30 now or 7:30. Yesterday I did this. He said, but if you think about it, the past is only what's in your memory. All we have is the series of nows simultaneously going on in so many different directions. So at this particular moment, it's now. That's past, what I just said a second ago. But the only way you know what I said was because of a memory, right? Your memory, remember, oh, Greg said this, or, you know, Melody said this an hour ago. Or this happened in 1642, the dinosaurs were here. What do we have? A record of fossils and rocks. Okay. Now, what he was trying to say was, if there's no time, then what, you know, what could it be? And he's really, it's a really, you know, good way to look at things, because let's say there is a God. Maybe God, he has no time. So we created time. We created an order of events in our own way to try to figure things out, but are we really right? Because think of it this way. If you take the Bible or any book and you take each page and rip it out and throw it on the floor, and then you just start picking page by page, every page in itself has its own identity. So I pick up the first page, and I go, oh, Jesus died on the cross. But I don't know when. But does it matter? Or Noah's flood. Okay, well, maybe that happened yesterday. Or was it 450? Does it really matter? We have created that time when maybe time doesn't really exist. And how do we, you know, who measures it? We figured out a way to measure it. But there's been so many different ways to measure it. Now everybody thinks in terms of time and space, but maybe it's not that way. And if you think of it, it really strengthens a person's belief in God, because maybe God was there. Who knows how, you know, what happened? We don't know. We're trying to put it into time frames that we can't figure out. So that's why I say, if you read the Bible sometimes, we try to order all these events, and people argue their lives away, whether this happened in this year, or this happened there, and this is, didn't, well, nobody knew anything till 200 about Jesus. Everything is, you know, into our frame of reference, but maybe if, oh, we look at life differently, uh-huh. You know. In terms of spirituality, I'm not talking in terms of, you know, look, you've heard the expression, live in the now, you know. And look, that makes sense too. I mean, live in the now. Because what are we doing most of the time? We're thinking about our mistakes and our mistakes or our successes in the past, or we think about what we're going to be doing in the future, when none of it, that there is no past anymore. I mean, it's what we remember. And that can be skewed. Everybody may have a different meaning. And as far as the future, you don't know, Melody, what I'm going to say in the next 10 seconds, do you?
No. I can assume or presume, but I don't know.
You don't know. And I don't know what you're going to do tomorrow. And I don't know what the world's going to be like in 5 days. And I'm not going to predict. But we have people even predicting things like, oh, you know, the world's going to end December 22nd or whatever, 2012. Oh, and this year there's going to be mass chaos in the streets, and that's why I'm collecting 500 million pounds of corn and becoming a prepper or whatever they do. You know, everybody's predicting the future, but they're not living right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a different, you know, it has a real significance in your life. But when you think of it in terms of history, and you think of it in terms of how history can be changed, when you look at things, even God, you may look at things differently if you consider that time really does not exist in the way we think it does. And that can change their whole thinking pattern. And you begin to think in terms of, wow, you know, really? You know, if that's the case, well, maybe then this could be and this can be. And it's not the same anymore. And man had to figure out a way to make things orderly. And that's why I think a lot of what was done in the Old Testament and the New Testament have been compiled by man. And I take a very strong view that it is not written by God, because I don't think God would write that way. I mean, and I presume that. But if he doesn't have, if God, for example, Christian, everybody will say God is timeless, right? He was here, there is no time. Well, if God is timeless, why is everything so timely here? Why would the Bible be written with this tension of being the creation happened in 6 days and it happened back then and this happened here, then Job, and then, and it goes on in a very orderly manner, doesn't it? All the way to 2,000 years ago, then it stops. And, you know, well, why did it stop? I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. But that doesn't mean you don't believe that there's no God. I just think that sometimes, I think there's great messages in the Bible.
Okay, now.
I don't think it was divinely written. I think it was written by a man who thought he was divinely inspired, and maybe was. But I find it very difficult to say that God actually wrote those words, and those are the only words, and the guys that read other books of spirituality are all wrong, you know. It's just hard to believe. And so you get into that. And if you can wipe all that stuff away, and my point is not to become a preacher here, but my point is if you can wipe all that stuff away, you can have a chance of getting to the truth about the Vatican. Because they are up to their necks in this stuff. And that's where they like to keep it. Because isn't it cute? You know, they can get everybody mad at everybody. Christians hate Muslims. Muslims hate Hindus. Hindus hate this. The Vatican is supposedly the one that likes everybody, but they're fomenting all the wars all over the down place. When you really figure out what they're doing through the Jesuit order. You see where I'm going with this?
Right, but okay, so then maybe you need to give a little bit of the history of what the Jesuit thing is about and why that's prevalent. And does it go back to beyond that? Is there a tie to not only before, when you're talking about Rome, but tie to Sumerians or the Talmud or other aspects?
You know, the point, if you go back into there's a modern way to look at things, you know, going back to, you know, the modern, I mean, I'm not going to go back to the Old Testament and look at things like that, but when just look at what, you know, they were formed at a certain time for a certain reason, and they are were the henchmen for the Pope and the Pope's protectors. And throughout the years, you know, their order has been called the Great Educators. They happen to have, you know, look, you got to get to the Vatican and the Jesuit order have a history together, and they're kind of like the good cop and the bad cop in many situations. One can't exist without the other. And that's the whole secret to behind them, is that they'll present this view of the Great Educators, you know, we're the solemn order of the Catholic Church. But if you look at their history, basically what they are is the enforcers. And as history moved along, the Jesuits, the things change. You know, they're in most every country. Let's look at our country. Georgetown University just happens to be a stone's throw away from the White House. It just happens that the School of Foreign Service was started by a priest by the name of Father Edmund Walsh, who started the School of Foreign Service years ago. This was he died during the Eisenhower's presidency. And Edmund Walsh was not only just, you know, here's a couple interesting things. Our School of Foreign Service started at Georgetown University, now places most of our diplomats are Georgetown educated, meaning Jesuit educated. And if you look at some of the NSA directors from the last, even from the 9/11 period to now, they're all Jesuit trained. And most of our major diplomats are Jesuit trained through the School of Foreign Service. Why? So they can have control. Now, a Jesuit has an order, they're a priest, but they don't always wear the robes. You'll find them everywhere. You won't even know who they are sometimes. And one of the key figures to research is a guy by the name of Father Edmund Walsh. Now, my question to everyone is this. Father Edmund Walsh was an educator. Now, why is there a page on Dwight Eisenhower's website to this day? When he died, they had a big, huge ceremony for him in the White House, to, you know, honoring him. Now, there are a lot of great educators in the world, in our country, that, you know, but why would this guy, a priest from Georgetown, be honored by Dwight? Well, when you start looking at his history, you'll see that he wasn't just a priest. He was in Iraq in the 30s. He was in China. He was in Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution, doing a whole bunch of other things. And the question I asked Georgetown, which I never got an answer, is I said, why was he in Russia during this period of time? I've got information that he was there. Well, information goes a little deeper, and when you start understanding who Joseph Stalin is. Now, Joseph Stalin was depicted as he came from a broken family, they say. That would be his father was an alcoholic. But no, Joseph Stalin came from a Catholic family. He was trained at a place called Tiflis, which was in Russia. That was a Jesuit university there, where they trained priests. He was there during, he might as well be called a priest. And someone went over to...
But during this period, they were supposed to be anti-religious,
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, they say they are, but the Jesuit will say anything. They're involved in churches. You know, they'll be in churches. They'll say they're Jews. They'll say they're Episcopalians. They'll do anything to keep the power moving in the direction for basically the way to describe our country is we're the Roman legion for the Vatican. Okay, we are the Roman, we are the military might. That's what we're here for. And if you look at it, that's what we are. That's all we ever do is, that's what we're really good at. Killing brown people and fighting wars. And killing, you know, black people, brown people, everything, you know. We like killing colored people. And we have all these wars all the time. And we are the Roman Legion. But the point is, Walsh is a key figure. And when you start finding out more about him, there's great. There's a bunch of evidence showing that he was sent over to these countries, not as a priest, but as more of a diplomat, undercover guy. His main goal in Russia was during the Bolshevik Revolution, they needed money. And this is a whole plan to build Russia, okay, to a certain point. But at that particular juncture, they didn't really have Lenin in their pocket, but they did have Stalin. And so Walsh goes to Lenin, and all of a sudden, there's a million, they got the money they want from the Western banks. Now, when you start looking at Western banks funding the Bolshevik Revolution, funding, not only that, they funded Hitler, you can trace the money going from these banks, Western banks, into Hitler's pockets to keep that war going, going into the Bolshevik Revolution. But Walsh had a proviso to Lenin. We'll give you the money, but we want Stalin to be at the top of, you know, in, into the, you know, leadership role here in the Bolshevik Revolution. What was their reason for that? Well, they wanted to get rid of Lenin. Lenin knew it. And Lenin tried to kill Stalin, but Stalin killed him first. And that was on orders by certain people involved. I think it was a Polish Jesuit general at the time was involved in that whole thing.
So is this like a Zionist Jesuit?
I wouldn't call it Zion. No, see, look, the Jews basically are the Vatican scapegoats, okay? And the powerful Jews that are now basically, everybody wants to blame the rich Jewish people and all that, you know, the guys. But they're basically not Jews. It's just like the Knesset. In when you go, when you understand the Jewish government, they are the same as our government. They say they're Jewish, but they don't represent the Jewish people. They're not Jews. They're basically, I call them the papal court Jews that work for the Pope. And they like to put out these names that are Jewish, and that gets the heat off of them. You know, blame the Jews, then the Vatican walks scathe-free, you know.
Yeah, but you also hear it being vice versa for the on the Jewish side, too. Blame the other side for, you know, the Holocaust or whatever. I mean, you get that thrown out there too, right?
What do you mean? Blame the Jews for the Holocaust? When
I mean,
they were not. Killed?
I mean, I'm sorry, I said that, stated that wrong. Blame the other side for the Holocaust. So you get this blame the other side thing going on. Is what you're saying? It sounds like you're saying.
Everybody does. Yeah, and that's okay. The way you don't know what's going on, but you just have to look where the money goes, and then you'll figure it out. I mean, it doesn't matter if you can put a look. I could say to you that I have a Jewish name, and but who do I really work for? You know, just like George Bush says he's a Christian. Does he really believe that? Do you believe, you know, I mean, it's the same thing. The point is they work for somebody of a higher level. There's a whole different thing going on at the top that we don't get. And you got to include the Vatican here because they are the top guy. The Pope is the head of all this stuff, and people can't believe it, and that's okay. But let me tell you, when you really understand what's going on, and it doesn't matter what he says. He can say he's for abortion or against abortion. He says he's for it, but he's against it behind the scenes. For example, an example. Why do we have all these presidents going to bow down to the popes these days? You know, you know, in the days before these new presidents, you know, Carter and Reagan and Bush and all these guys, you know, going to Rome, nobody ever went to Rome. Why are they doing that now? And
well, it looks like they're going to England, bowing to the Queen. They're going
exactly.
to Rome.
She's involved in this too. You know?
Right. And
so,
then,
I mean, there's a whole involvement with England because, you know.
And Israel.
No, let me finish with the Vatican okay. so you okay. get it. If you look at what we're doing, so let's give you an example. When you see Bush going talking to the Pope after the war. They're meeting, and they got pictures coming out, and they're under the picture of the Jesuit, St. Ignatius Loyola, who was the head of the first Jesuit head of the Jesuit order. He's like their god, Ignatius Loyola. Okay, so they picture Bush with the Pope underneath that picture, and they're talking about how they want to improve relations. But let's talk about this. Bush is at war. The Pope publicly came out as against the war. That's the Pope. That was the Pope's public position. I'm against the war. Why would he even, if he's against the war, why do they get together like good old buddies? You know, in the old days, that wouldn't have happened. But things have gotten to the point now where they're so ingrained in their power, they can show all these things. And they can get away with it now because no one questions them. And the point is, that's a perfect example of how they operate. You know, the Pope will say, I'm against the war, but he's really for the war and created the war. And he meets with all the warmongers. And he'll say things like publicly, you know, I mean, it goes on and on. It's just a bunch of double talk. One thing for the masses, mm-hmm. another agenda for the elite. And the point is, they use Christianity and the devil and all these demons and all this stuff for their benefit. Everything is for their benefit. And that's how they work. Because, you know, I tell, you know, people just really look at the money the Walsh brokered to Stalin. Now, what happened to Stalin? Stalin then takes over the head of the Bolshevik Revolution, becomes the leader of Russia, was our ally. Why is he killing 30 million people? He made Hitler look like a small town crook compared to the number of people he killed there to get Russia to where they needed them to be, that big superpower that when the war, Second World War and the Korean War were over, they needed another war, so they had the Cold War. Then that fell apart. Then they had another one. What, the War on Terror? So, I mean, are these all coincidences? No.
Well, wasn't part of Stalin's work done before the war? When they started going into the Ukraine, wasn't that Stalin?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, like I said, that was all being planned out. Mm-hmm. You know, then Stalin, you know, why is he our ally if he's killing 30 million people? You know, think about it. And then Russia becomes our enemy. So, I mean, the whole idea, I mean, it's not meant for one show. I mean, it's very complicated. But right, if you just kind of take history and turn it on its side and look at it from a different angle.
Well, I heard someone make the statement earlier today that, you know, we need to quit viewing it as war, but as occupations. And because that's what really happens, and we end up occupying these places.
Well, we ought to view it this way, like Bush said. I mean, in his famous war speech before we're going into Iraq after, you know, their false flag 9/11 thing, he said it's a crusade. That's what we really ought to look at it as, crusades for the Pope. And, you know, if you start looking at their power, they have over 192 concordats with countries around the world. A concordat means you get into a document with the Pope, which means they get money. I mean, you ask Germany how much they pay Catholicism and the Catholic Church. But look at there's a small little island that was looking, I can't even remember what it was. Vatican just signed, I go to a website, all is concordat.com. It's really a good website. It keeps track of all the Vatican intrigue around the world that you can't even imagine the keep track of anymore. But what I'm getting at is they got involved with some really poor island, a small country, and this happened like 2 or 3 years ago, and they signed a concordat with some dictator, right? I should mention that their government of choice is fascism, okay? It is, they'll get in bed with anybody. Dictators, you have it. Freedom lovers, whatever, they don't care. Money's the same. But the point is, they make a concordat with this country, and the deal was that the country would fund the building of the biggest church in the world, okay? And they did that. And they used all the money of the country to build it while the people are starving. Now that's how they work. And so now everybody can go in there and starve in a nice little cathedral, huge cathedral, biggest cathedral in the world, built there. And that's, you know, wouldn't it make sense to feed the, if they want to help the poor, to feed the poor first before building a big church, you know, and using all their money?
Okay, let me say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and my guest is Greg Anthony, and we're talking about the Vatican and their much of the history around them. So when you're saying that, I mean, you know, it reminds me a lot of what, if they're concordant, sounds like a contract. Is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah. It's
okay.
Like basically,
and so, these guys are going in there working in the way of a corporation of sorts, maybe?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, the Vatican, you see, is a country. It's a real, like a football field. If you're in Rome, it's the smallest country in the world. They have their own banking system. They have their own post office, their own military, their own justice system. They're a country, you know, which is supposedly like, so they get involved both spiritually and politically. So what is that about? Well, if you start looking at it, the Pope wears, he's the, you know, he wears that little fish hat within there. He's the head of everything, you know. He's the man in charge of not only your soul, but of your money, your military. The whole thing revolves around this little country. Why are they even a country to begin with? You think about it, there's about, what, 1,000 people or three, you know, I've thrown parties with more people than they have in their country, you know? So why can't I have a country?
Well, it kind of reminds me like an enclave where they, I mean, it is an enclave of sorts where they get to do their commerce in their own fashion because they have their own sovereignty, right?
Well, yeah. It's the only religious organization that is also a country. And, you know, it's the United Nations, which is a fraud in itself. They're represented there. But the point is, that's how they get protection, you know. They can say, listen, you know, we got diplomatic immunity. But the point is, that's strange. You know, if they're really a religious organization, why are they a country? I mean, it's more than that. I mean, they're probably the most wealthy organization in the world to begin with.
Okay, so you tie that. Now, isn't there a tie with them into Jerusalem? So, I mean, where you, it's,
of course,
it's even hard to tell which
one
is.
They have a huge presence there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's even hard for me to decipher, and I'm just me, of course.
Well, they control Israel. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, so you tie the queen
in
there.
They, you know, the Temple Mount, they own the deed to the Temple Mount there, so they own it.
Okay.
And that's public record. They got involved in that in the 90s.
Okay.
So they own the Temple Mount. And why would they own it if, you know, it's supposed to be a city of all religions, you know, Muslim, Christian, Jews, all together. But the Vatican has a huge presence there, and the Pope has a huge place he goes to when he stays in Jerusalem.
Okay, so then who is the land owner around the world, and where does the Queen come into this?
Well, let's just say that she basically works for... let's make it simple. She's a huge power, but she works for the Pope as well. And England has an interesting history with Rome that we're told the wrong story, I believe. We're told that, you know, England was the bad guys. But there'd been a huge struggle long before America was founded here in 1776, back in the, let's just go back into the 1600s. And the Vatican was trying to take over the English government, okay? And basically, to make a story simple, they were kicked out of England. That's why they ended up here. But, you see, they have, once, you, I mean, it sounds so simple. Everybody in England hates the Vatican. No, I mean, they had operatives working. But the point is, the reason that they came here was under the guise that, oh, big bad England threw us out. We don't have any freedom of religion. We're going to go to the new land and have freedom of religion. But the real point was, the reason that England kicked him out wasn't because of their religion. It was because they wanted to overthrow the government. And they understood what the Vatican really is all about. So there was a love, there's a hate relationship there. But they also have now overcome that. That's why Tony Blair became a Catholic after he left office. That's why the Queen and all the things after that happened kind of molded into that one group that works together. And if you can't beat them, join them. It's basically the way to look at it. So they come over to America with a fraud based on, well, listen, wouldn't this be great if we could go there in America under the guise of freedom of religion? They don't want us here in England. We can forget about the story about overthrowing their government. Nobody will believe that. We didn't do that. But, you know, if you look at really what was going on during that period of time, that's what they were. They were going to blow up Parliament. But anyway, when the first colonists came over, when the first people came over here back in the 1600s, there's records of discussions of the main, back in the 1640s or whatever, the pilgrims, that people that came here, Christians from England. One of the main things they were fighting, were saying amongst themselves, was, we do not want Jesuits here. We do not want them in this country. They were very suspect because they realized what they did there. They didn't want them here. That's written in documents that never gets read, and I found some and talked to some people that had compiled the information of some of the boat captains that were coming over here in the early days before, you know, the 1700s. And one of the main concerns was to keep Catholicism out of here, because they realized what they were doing back then. But then things start to change, and the main reason they came here was that if you can say, hey, we're coming here for freedom of religion, but the real point we're coming here is to basically say we have freedom of religion, but in the end, we want to control it all. And that was their goal. So they come here, and you start looking at American history. And let me just give you, I love looking at all the symbols on the buildings. And you'll find, if you go into the Senate or it's the House, if you look above the podium, you'll see the most inquisitive, you know, there's a picture of a pope, and my memory is failing me, but it was probably the biggest inquisitor pope ever created in by the Catholic Church. And it's staring right down on the House of Congress or Senate. I can't remember which one. Just amazing. Then you look at the statue above Congress, what that really stands for. You know, pagan symbol. Rome was instrumental in putting that up, and when they did it during the time of Lincoln, Lincoln wouldn't even come out of his office during the putting up of that thing on the Congress, because he knew what they were all about. So anyway, look back to our history. Why do you think, you know, why is Washington, D.C. our capital? Well, oh, that's because we decided it would be there. Oh, really? Who decided it? You know, why wouldn't it have been Philadelphia? That was the main city. Why? Well, the land was owned by the first Catholic bishop here. Okay? One of the most powerful men behind the scenes that you never hear about in the Continental Congress.
Okay, because I've heard story that it was George Washington. Wrong?
No, it wasn't his property. He was a landowner adjacent.
Okay.
And was friends with the bishop.
Okay.
And His whole family. That bishop came over, and there was only one Catholic bishop, and he owned all that property, and so they built it on his property.
Okay.
Yeah, there's stories about Washington being a closet Catholic. Nobody knows, you know. And I remember writing some things about it and getting criticized by Christians who believe George Washington was the best thing since sliced bread. Because even some of the guys who criticize the Vatican are really. Yeah, I'm going to give people a tip. Always look at the first guys out with all the information on the internet. Look back. The guys like, and I'm not saying they are. I'm saying it always is strange that the guys that come out first with the information are the ones you got to worry about. Because they're the one, you know, why? How do they know so much? Where do they come from? And do that with Vatican researchers, too. And you'll find that some really blaring discrepancies in how they operate. Behind the scenes, when they talk about things like Washington, the founding fathers, and then their criticism of the Vatican, but they don't want to face some of the facts that are true. And the point I'm trying to get at is that a lot of the things about our elite back when we founded this country aren't true. And we're just, oh, the founding fathers were so great, our country was so great, but look at how it's deteriorated now. It's all these crazy founders. They were always the same way, people. Elite people are always the same way, 300 years ago or today. They didn't form this country so that you could have a great job, so that you could make a lot of money and be free and have no laws that will infringe upon your privacy. No, no. That's a great document, but that wasn't their plan. The way to get away with things is to make people believe they're free. But you have been owned, people have been owned in this country ever since Washington, ever since the Founding Fathers. They were the first owners, working for other people that were bigger owners. And you're being owned today by the same people. It's just a different time frame, so get used to it.
Well, way I view it is it was a corporate, you know, you're saying it's a Vatican, but I still see a corporate enterprise being set up here. And so you have these two.
Yeah, they're a corporation. The Vatican is a corporation. I mean, everything is a corporation. Why not use a corporation? But what do you mean a corporation?
What is a corporation?
Corporation has no meaning, really, and it is just an entity formed by people, you know.
With contracts, right?
Well, put it this way. If I'm a church, okay, I can invest. I don't pay taxes to begin with. I get land that's cheap. I can broker deals with anybody I want. I got the cover of Christ. I've got everything. I can invest my money and put it where I want. And under fake corporations, I get in bed with the biggest people in the world because I have the money. You know, that's the Vatican. They're the big guys. But all these other little guys, you know, and what do you think, the Mormon church is little? They work hand in hand with them. You know, and so do all these, so does Billy Graham and the rest of these guys. You know, there's a whole huge fraud going on that we don't get at. But the point is, they all work together. And the reason they work together is that they, you know, why shouldn't they have their own corp? You know, the Vatican is invested in, if you look at their, you know, you don't even know their investments all half the time. But I would say next to the government, they're probably next to our American government, they're probably the biggest landholder here. But that doesn't mean they can't be friends with Ted Turner, who might be, you know. And, you know, the point is, it's a big club and you're not in it, you know. And me and you are not in the club.
Right. And, but, you know, you see these things like the Nature Conservancy being one of the larger landowners in the world. But I don't think that we see the actual titles to this. I mean, because there seems to be such a fraud on fraud that even when they're at this point in time destroying, you know, the paperwork on property in this country.
Mm.
So it's going to be fought among the guys at the top as to who owns what, from what I can tell. The rest of us are just going to be left, you know, landless when they start sorting this out, right?
Yeah, you can see it now. I mean, it's not the same country. It's changing quicker than we'd like, but I mean, there's been a steady progression of the same type of activities, more control, more corporate control, more religious control, more, you know, everything geared towards a more of a totalitarian country than a country of based on freedom. You know, take guns away, don't criticize anybody. Everybody's watching you. You better not say anything bad about, if you talk bad about the government, you're a terrorist. You know, things like that, that absolutely make no sense to freedom, you know. And the point is, the role is always to get people arguing. They use what's called the Hegelian dialectic. And what that means is, you have a thesis and an antithesis. For example, use it in war. You have Hitler, you have America. But what was the reason for that war? And if you're at the top controlling both of them, you know, if you're pulling the puppet strings on both of them, then you can create a synthesis that you want. And that was what? After World War II, United Nations. and further and further. So if you look at things, look at politicians, the left, the right, you have a thesis and antithesis. They're constantly arguing, mm-hmm. but if you control both of them, you can get a synthesis that you choose.
Right.
And so that's how they work. They want always, for example, abortion, anti-abortion, no guns, guns. Everything seemingly like guys are on your side. Oh, if you're on the left, you believe in social justice. And if you're on the right, you're nothing but a corporate monger. But the real point is at the levels that they all work together. Mm-hmm. They just have a way of controlling you that way, making it seem like you have a choice when you have no choice. No matter if you vote left or right, or whether you're against the war, you're for the war. You have no choice. You can be. Look at the Vietnam War. That was a great example, and I lived through it as a young. I was kind of my generational war. But the point is, that was the greatest time to look at it. Looking back on it, you'll see that. You had that war, the anti-war, the war people fighting all back and forth. But little did we know, we had no choice anyway. But that's the way you keep people controlled. But you got to be the guys at the top controlling both these sides. So who do you think controlled the anti-war movement or the warmongers? It was the same people. Mm-hmm. They can put operatives in there, just like they control the 9/11 movement. You don't think that there's a lot of people out there in the 9/11 movement that were truthful, but they also had a lot of government operatives working in it,
right?
Discrediting the people from the inside, even though they were saying they were 9/11 truth seekers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Hegelian dialectic, which is basically thesis antithesis creates a synthesis, is the way they work, and it really does work,
Okay, now when you talk about the Vatican being, the wealthiest and whatever, but you have the City of London and you have the Rothschilds. Are the Rothschilds Catholic or are they Jewish or what?
Well, does it matter? I mean, what does it matter, really?
It probably doesn't matter to them, but that's where
I mean, the Rothschilds were the Vatican bankers, right?
Okay.
They were the bankers for the Vatican. They were the ones that held the Vatican money. Now, in any world that I live in, the banker isn't the head. It's the guy who has the money that's the boss. So that's how I view Rothschild. They were the Vatican bankers. That's a fact. So usually the banker isn't the boss of the person who has money. It's the person who has money. And so the pecking order still exists.
So you haven't gotten into the...
But yeah, they may work. They work together. They can play the Jewish game, too. Oh, the evil Rothschilds, but the Vatican is really cool, I mean, what do you think they use the Jews for?
Okay, now, but what about the white and the black, or, the black pope? What about that? Where does that come in?
The what?
The black pope.
That's the term they use in Italy. They call him Papa Nero in Italy, and then it gets translated the Black Pope, and that means he's always the Jesuit general. The head of the Jesuit order is called the Black Pope.
Uh-huh.
And he's not black. But the reason is that the term in Italy came because they understood who he really is. He's the man behind the scenes who actually has a lot of power, even more than the Pope, perhaps, because he's the one doing the dirty work. And many people will say that he gives the orders to the Pope when it really comes to push and shove. It's kind of like the white, the good cop, bad cop guy,
mm-hmm.
Behind the scenes. Now, the Jesuit general to the public is a great guy, right? I remember it was so funny. There was one of the guys, and when I started really getting into this, it was Father Hans Kolvenbach, and he more played that part. He looked more like a real evil guy. But he was getting a lot of heat. He was pretty out there, in the public eye, and he was getting a lot of heat. So he stepped down, and which is very unusual with the Jesuit general, because they usually are on for life. But he stepped down, and this other real diminutive-looking guy from Spain, I can't even think of his name now, took over, and he looks like, a saint. Just a real, a guy, if you, he looked like Barney Fife or something, you know. So anyway, he takes over, and Kolvenbach, I believe, is somewhere still pulling the strings somewhere. Mm-hmm. But they got him out of the public eye, I think. So anyway, this guy takes over, and he ends up in Los Angeles. And there was a YouTube done by a young girl that picked up on the Vatican story and read all about the Jesuits. And she went in, and he was seeing kids at the end of the show and at the end of his speech, and she started peppering him with questions. Oh. It was so hilarious because they just really, they treated her like she was, you know, a Nazi spy or something. He had his entourage pull her out, wouldn't talk to her. So you're thinking, why would a guy who's a priest act that way? You know, look, even if she's wrong, he should be able to sit and say, my dear young lady, you're very mistaken, and let's sit and talk, and I'll answer any of your questions. God was an open book, Jesus is an open book, and I'm an open book. At least that's what that's supposed to be like. They tell you that, don't they? But they don't want to answer these questions, and they had her. He had his bodyguards like escort her out, you know. So it's kind of crazy, but that's what I'm kind of getting. That was kind of cool, I thought. But anyway.
Okay, now when you were talking about, you know, the symbology around the D.C. area having a lot of this Catholic, because, I mean, I've heard a lot of it being going even back further than that, and then you also hear about
pagan,
a lot of and Masonic.
Well, see, Catholicism really is paganism when you start looking at it, and many of the Christian symbols, too, are pagan. I mean, so let's just, you know, Christians mm-hmm. will say they adhere to the Bible, but they still worship the same pagan symbols, you know, like we all know we can read back and look at other cultures that had the same kind of Jesus story. They had the same kind of Trinity. They had the same, there's a lot of things that were hijacked from other cultures mm-hmm. prior to Christianity. And so, you know, the Christians got to face up to that too. So much of our country is adorned with these pagan Roman pagan symbols, wherever they came from, you know. And one is the statue on the Congress building, and I can't even remember what it is. It's been there's so many of them. I went through all of them, and I've forgotten most of them.
I had a girlfriend that took pictures of all of the gargoyles just on one of the churches there in D.C. It was fascinating photographic study, but there were tons of them, and the entities that they represented, or they were not necessarily good. They gave you the creeps looking at some of them.
Right, but you see, they adhere to all these old pagan. You know, much of what they do is pagan. Even the fish hat the Pope wore. I mean, there's symbols he carries. If you watch, they used to, John Paul and a number of popes. They carry a cross that's a bent backwards cross, and that's a very symbolic pagan symbol. But you see, what they got you believing in, and this is kind of the next step. I think you got to start thinking in terms of the fact that these myths, if, for example, the Vatican, if you didn't believe that, you know, devils and all this exists, their power is limited, because what they're doing is they're actually worshiping what they call a Lucifer or Satan. And the fact is, if people believe that, then it gives them power. But if you don't believe it, then what power do they really have? You see, I take it from that point of view, that yes, many of their ceremonies, so they have what's called a black mass that's held in the Vatican, and that is a very satanic ritual. And they do all these things. And the point they're trying to make is that, you know, it's a complete opposite of, on the surface, they say they worship Jesus and God. But behind the scenes, they worship the light bearer, Lucifer. And but if this whole idea was just kind of discounted, like, see, if in the back of your mind you believe in Lucifer and Satan, then you gotta, you know, wow, they're the bad guys. They're worshiping the bad guy. But if you didn't believe, you know, if you didn't believe in it so strongly, then what are they doing? You know, they're just a bunch of idiots that really are worshiping some kind of myth. But what makes it work, what makes it really serious, is that they actually kill people like this, you know. And many of the rituals that they've done throughout the course of history, for example, the Holocaust was a ritual worshiping burning alive. If you look back at the history of burning people alive back in pagan times, what it really meant, worshiping to the gods, right? And so the Holocaust was basically the same thing. And many of their genocides are symbolic. Not only do they kill people, but they're symbolic symbols. You know, and that's the problem. So, you know, even the worship, even sodomy and all these crazy things that you hear about, okay, all have a different meaning to them.
Now, to do a different, little bit of a shift here, because you cover something on your website and under the investigative journal, is one on Eisenhower. Or some of these heroes that...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that I've gotten into several discussions with was around Eisenhower, because there's a lot of things that he was purported to be, and yet some of the generals around him were, you know, demonized. Maybe not... they shouldn't have been demonized in the manner that they were, and he was the one that managed to get, you know, be the hero. And yet, there was a Holocaust around Eisenhower, right?
Yeah, well, you know, looking, and I can't remember everything I wrote in that article, but Ike, for example, where did he first come from? And how did he become the supreme commander of our forces? And there's a tie here to Edmund Walsh as well. Because Walsh was very instrumental in putting Ike into power. And the reason he was put there was he could be controlled. And he was trusted. And Ike, you know, basically came... He was an attaché or something for MacArthur or whatever. MacArthur was very close to Walsh as well, Father Walsh. Edmund Walsh, this supposed only educator. But was also memorialized on Ike's website still. You'll see a page on Walsh, if he's just a little priest, why? But anyway, so Ike, there were about over 50 more qualified military people that should have been ahead of him for this position, but somehow he leapfrogged all these people and ended up being basically just their pawn, doing what the elite wanted that war. That's why many things were delayed. You know, why we could have... That's why Patton got into huge arguments with him. And Patton realized what was going on with the Russians. He realized the war was being mishandled. People were getting killed for no reason. Could have wiped these... You know, could have been done a lot quick. You know, Patton was, I think, a pretty straight shooter. You know, pretty hard-nosed guy and a pretty much of a, you know, an American patriot. But he, when he was killed, you know, they say it was an accident, but when he was killed, he was on his way back to expose Eisenhower and to talk about this stuff publicly, and they had to get rid of him, is what I believe from the research I did. But here's the point. Then you see the movie Patton, and they made him out to be what? A nutcase who thought he was, you know, reincarnated general from when, you know, remember, was it Alexander the Great or something, you know? So they made Patton to be a little bit, they made him out to be a little nuts when I don't think that was the true depiction of Patton. But as far as a lot of the little things that Ike did, may never be known, but I think you just have to look at his connections and why he rose to power when there were so many more people. He was not qualified for that position, put it bluntly. There were over 50 more qualified military men And even in the rumblings in the military were the same during that period of time. Then he becomes president. That was his reward for playing the war game the way it should be played, is what I think.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things that I found, because he was, you know, they were purporting that Ike was born in the town that I had lived in Texas, and then I went and started looking at that because I had my husband had a grandfather that had signed off on the birth certificate of Eisenhower. Mm-hmm. Even though the courthouse had burned, I'm not even sure that there was a birth certificate, because a lot of times those people didn't have birth certificates from that time period.
Interesting.
But when you go into the home that he was supposedly lived in, there was references to him being born in another town, not that town. And it wasn't in Kansas either. So it really put a cloud over a lot of the information that was being given around his origins, and it just happened to be right around the time that, you know, they were having all the questions on Obama's birth certificate,
and that makes it even more suspicious, you know, when you think about it,
right? But they seem to be intent on making sure he had a birth certificate from that time period. So it really was interesting to find out how little information there was in this place that was supposedly his birthplace. It was as though he did not even want to acknowledge that it was, and yet you would hear that some said that he lived there. But I wasn't totally sure by the time I was looking at the information I was finding. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the story of Ike and then FDR, and you start looking at all these guys from a different point of view, then things to me make a little more sense, because I never really thought all these wars were just coincidental. I still believe, you know, looking at the Iraqi war, I don't really believe the Muslim people would want to come to war against us, or that most Americans would hate Muslims unless they're baited into hating each other.
Okay,
and that's how they operate.
I want to add this other part to that whole story that I was just telling you, because I had a friend that found a box in the street that was put there after a house had burnt down, and it was soaked with all this stuff there. And so he sorted through it, and it had a lot of different signatures on it of people back in that time frame. So, and there was probably 50 to 100 letters there, with signatures of Lyndon Johnson and all these different people. So he sent the paperwork up to us for my husband to sort through it and maybe sell it on eBay. But one of the letters in there, and this was the only I had in my husband when he passed away. He had this one clipping from his grandfather signing off on this birth certificate. Yet in these letters was the letter from Mamie Eisenhower that this guy was writing back and forth to get her to sign off so that he signed that birth certificate. It was so weirdly coincidental. I mean, you couldn't have...
So maybe he wasn't even an American citizen or what?
I don't know. I'm just saying that the coincidence of even being able to find these autographs and to find... I mean, there's a whole other story around it, but it was really coincidental to be able to even find this letter and put it together, because, you know, it just was almost serendipity, you know. Because we were not living there at the time when this other person found these letters. So it was
That's interesting.
So anyways, going back to your work and around the Eisenhower, the purpose it seemed that you were trying to bring out in this article was the fact that some of these guys' backgrounds was the fact that, you know, even FDR and some of these heroes were not necessarily the people that they were purported to be.
Right. I mean, if I go back to this, what I'm getting at is that they're depicted as heroes, but they're really not. And isn't that kind of how it really works? I mean, when you really start looking at our background, you know, if you look at the real research regarding some of the founding fathers, the same thing, the same type of operation continues. You make a person, you know, you put these people out there. Like we think, many people think George Bush is the hero, you know, but when you really start looking at who he really is, or Clinton, all of these people, and that's how the American system works, I believe. We have what's called a illusion of freedom and heroes, and we want that. People can't just think, well, we'd elect a guy that really doesn't really hold our interests in this as his first priority. Like I said, Eisenhower lengthened the European war, which caused further crimes against humanity, and I document some of those, what he did. And I think Patton understood some of this stuff, and that's what the big riff was about.
Well, you know, one of the things, and you had to have run across this in your work particularly, because you're doing the hands-on research. I did just a little bit of going down and trying to go through records, just going from one library or one type of record to another, at courthouses. And I was amazed at how much of that could be falsified, or changed, or left out, or burnt, I would talk to one librarian, and would say, you know, all those censuses were burnt in so and so, and then you go to the next library in the next town, and it says, oh, here it is,
mm-hmm.
And I would just go and. Then you look at the court records and you realize, you know, all you had to do was file a certain thing in a court, and it goes down as history. When I was trying to look for addresses related to things around these letters, and they didn't even exist on the plats. So, but they go into a written record, and it's amazing what you can. You know, that type of information isn't necessarily going to be any better than some of the stuff they claim is on the internet. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when if you can, I guess the whole theory is, if, you know, in bigger terms, if you can control what's written about the past, you can actually control the future. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And if we really, that's why I said anybody who's taken a history course in college ought to sue every university and get their money back, because it's a big, huge, you might as well just be reading reading fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I'm getting at is some of the real glaring things are never covered, never even discussed.
Right.
And that leads me to believe that there's so much more, but if you don't have information, how are you going to ever change things? I mean, I could talk to the cows come home about some of this stuff, and no one's going to do anything anyway, because they can't believe it. They want to see something, whether it's true or not, that is validated by supposedly a powerful group,
mm-hmm.
the top guys, a big publishing house, a big TV station, a big this or that, a president, a congressman, a big priest. They tell the truth. These are the books they want us to read. So that's what we're going to... Now, even if people say they don't believe it, they're going to believe it. I don't know how you say it any other way. They say they don't, but they do, because deep down inside you can't change those ingrained belief systems that have been given to you been hammered into your head since a kid. And only a small minority of people can do it. You know, and it's not... You can handle a few things in life, but not everything. And that's really how they know that. And the reason I say that is that I'm not saying that you may be that way, but I'm saying that they deal in terms of the critical mass. We don't care what Melody thinks. If Melody thinks the story that Greg's saying is true and we need to research in the Vatican and get to tell the truth about all this stuff, they don't care. Now, if the critical mass started thinking like Melody or me or somebody else that does this, then they start worrying. And the people that lead the charge to do that will be killed. And that's why you see a lot of these assassinations, because they're constantly controlling the critical mass. So many of the people that support a lot of the things I say that were in bigger positions, like Abe Lincoln, one, was killed by them. John F. Kennedy, two, killed by them. Why? Because he could bring this story to the critical mass and make, and then all of a sudden people are believing this stuff. You know, they can't have that.
One of the things I used to be curious about, why did C-SPAN also have this book thing where they ran these book reviews? And I never thought anything about it until one day, it was like all of a sudden, this was probably back 4 or 5 years ago, there was like 4 or 5 books on Lincoln that came out at once. And mm-hmm. I was going, now, what spurred that? Anybody that's been...
You know, really think, and I'll be real honest with you, mm-hmm. they monitor a lot of things we don't think they are important.
Right.
Like, for example, I can remember, there's a couple guys I interviewed, and I'm not saying it was from my shows, but a couple mm-hmm. books. One guy that I interviewed from Canada wrote a book that was really phenomenal. It's called the, the Transformation of the Republic or something. C.T. Wilcox.
Right.
And, man, what a great book he did. And on the real truth behind a lot of the things hidden about the Abe Lincoln assassination. And there was a pretty big discussion on this on the internet. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of people from all over the world were very interested in that story. And I got a lot of play on that story, put it that way.
Uh-huh.
But I noticed, and I talked to CT about this, he was trying to get the real movie made. He couldn't do it. Okay, he'd been trying to get funded for a long time, and the book and his information should well be out there in the big arenas where people see it, like on the History Channel or something.
Uh-huh.
But he could not get any funding anywhere, and he went to certain people in Canada, which is like our country. We're the same. You know, the same thing goes on there as here. And he couldn't get anything done. But right around that time, all of a sudden, the History Channel starts barraging people with falsities about Abe Lincoln, right?
No, and there were other books coming out at that time.
And then there are other books. And right. Then, didn't Robert Redford did a movie on Abe Lincoln or something, didn't he? Yeah.
I don't recall that, but I just knew
No, that there was a movie just done. Yeah, okay. Redford did a thing on Lincoln. And then they did. Didn't you see the thing that just came out in Hollywood? Abe Lincoln and the Vampire Killer, or something. The Vampire Killer.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so yeah, what they really did was, I think what they said was, you know, we gotta stop this story. You know.
So,
Maybe people believing things. You
well,
know?
Often you see when they can't stop the truth, then they confuse us with all these other disinformation. So then we have to really work extra hard at trying to, you know, filter through, to, you know, figure out where and what the truth is.
And right, and exactly. And it's that critical mass. They want to keep that critical mass into their ballpark so that, you know, they don't care if 4% of the population actually know the truth about Lincoln, or at least get that story out there so you can compare it to others. You know, that's all I've ever asked. You know, let's put this story side by side to their story and see what people think. Give them a chance to think, but they can't do that. So what I'm getting at is the critical mass must always be kept believing the lies and the myth and the illusion. And if they can't, if it changes, then if they think something may change it, usually the person behind it is killed. You know, he's getting too big for his britches, you know.
Well, sometimes you have to, it's like you said earlier, if it's, you know, you have to look for where they're not talking and what they're not talking about, and then that's where you start digging. And that's, you know, for a while, you know, you were the one that and Eric Phelps and there were some others out there too that you were bringing mm-hmm. on your program that were addressing this issue. And then once you you went away, you weren't hearing it.
Isn't that weird?
Mm-hmm.
That is strange, you know. And, you know, at times, to be real honest with you, you get burnt out. They know that, too. You see, they know you get burnt out doing it. And people always ask, naive people would say, well, how can you get away with saying this stuff? And how come you're the only one talking about it? It can't be true. And I said, yes, that's why it is true. And don't worry about it. No, but they'll kill you if you talk about this. I said, no, they won't. I said, I'm not even worried about it because I'm not big enough. The only thing I'd be worried about if I get too big, you know, and I don't want to get too big, you know, because I like living. That's a funny thing about me. I like living, you know. I'm not looking forward to going to the promised land yet. But the point I'm trying to get at is, let's just say that if you're going to get, if I was called up by the Tonight Show to talk about this stuff, and I actually got on and talked about it, I'd probably be dead in about 2 weeks. Or my plane would crash coming back from L.A. or something, you know. Or something would happen where I get drugged and then I'd be in jail or something over something I didn't do. You know, who knows? But that's what I'm talking about. That stuff goes on. And we're up against something that may never get changed. Okay? That's the first premise you have to realize. Mm-hmm. This may not get changed in our lifetime. However, it is a major issue that you need, as far as a thinking human being, to understand, at least to put it out on the table, you know. And if you get it out on the table, then you can find out, you know, what I would love is all the things that I did over the years, just to get out on the table to be compared with these other stories so that I know where I was wrong. Because I'm sure that everything that I've said hasn't been totally, you know, some of the things I'm not quite sure about either, but I want to put them out there. And I would like to know where I made my mistakes, but I don't even have anybody to do that with, you know?
Yeah, there's several people that you interviewed that I would like to see if they're still around, because some of them were some pretty very outspoken people that were taking a risk. And not that, you know, many people.
Yeah, like I said many times, some of the guests I came on, I'd worry more about their life than my own. You know?
Right, right.
Because actually they're the ones doing the talking, and I was the one bringing them out because nobody else would interview them. But the real issue is, what I was getting at, is that the importance is that as a thinking human being, you'd like to get this out and to discuss it and to better your country, better the things for your, you know, for the people that come after us. But the point is, they don't want thinking human beings.
Right. That's pretty obvious.
They do not like people who think. They like people who are led by their neck and told what to do and keep their mouth shut and take a, I don't know why people enjoy working more and getting less money and enjoy spending 3 weeks of their paycheck just to pay rent, or always 1 month away from being homeless in supposedly the greatest country in the world. So I said, no longer is America, I consider us a third world country right now, or whatever. We are a third world country. And I use a very good index to prove it. I live near, not far from Ensenada, and I checked out the cost of living, exactly what they pay for everything, what they make as far as money, and compared it to us. And everything, for example, gas there is about $2.15, bread is about half price, meat is about half price, rent is maybe even less than half price, but they only make about one-third or half of what we make. So if that doesn't, can you see what I'm getting at here?
Right.
Even if we make more, we're paying double, so we're just like them. And we consider Mexico a third world country, so I think we are too. We're just told we're not, but we are a third world country. And I just used the Ensenada Index of Living to prove it. And so let's quit playing games, American people, and just say, listen, you live in a third world country, your educational system sucks, it's never going to get better, because they don't want it to get better, and they want you to be dumb. You're going to always be led down the wrong path when your pharmaceutical companies and your medicine is going to kill you in the end. You're going to get rotten food. You're going to always be told what's right and wrong. And you're just here to basically tell people how great America is so that they can spread the BS around. And pretty soon, you know, all your children are going to be in the military because there aren't going to be any other jobs. And there's too many more people going into it now because all of them are going, what else am I going to do?
Yeah, that or they're in jail. And that's your,
exactly.
That's our
and you
answer.
Have the largest proportion of people in jail in the world, in this country.
Right.
Did you know that?
I'm aware of that. But I consider that our equivalent to third world country, the slave labor of third world countries. It's just
an interesting story. When I was in law school, I did a paper, a law review paper that never got published because it wasn't because they didn't want to publish it or nothing. Something happened and I got ill and I couldn't finish the paper, but I got through all the research on it. And I wanted to do it on the California Three Strikes Law that was just passed because of the Polly Class murder at the time. There was a child that was killed by a person that had two prior felonies, serious, huge felonies, and they let him out of jail. And when he was out of jail, he killed this poor little girl. So there was a big clamor, including the father and the mother, the Polly Class case, and it led to the government of California passing the Three Strikes Law, which meant this, that on your third felony, you're in jail for life. However, they failed to delineate the difference between a serious, what is a felony? And so I'm doing a research paper on this because I realized what was going on, and I'd spoken to, I got the quotes from Polly Class's father, who said after 5 or 6 years of this, 7 years of this law, he was like horrified because all these people were in jail for life. And let me give you an example. I found one woman. She had two minor drug charges, marijuana, and two possession charges of marijuana, which are felonies. The third one that she got out of jail. The third one, her husband was poor, and they were poor, and she had a child or two, and she went into the 7-Eleven and stole some food, which was a felony or something. The way they looked at it was actually a felony. The amount of stuff, it wasn't that much money, but they, that was another girl. This one, she stole a toolbox so her husband could work from Lowe's or Home Depot. So it was enough money to be considered a felony. So she gets sentenced. She was in jail for life for this, for two marijuana charges and stealing a toolbox. And then there were numbers of people like this. Polly Class's father, who was instrumental in helping to get this law passed, to protect people against, people that should be in jail for life, like that guy. He said, I never intended the law to be doing this to people. And he wanted to repeal it. And I don't even know if they have repealed it yet. But it was just insane to watch this go on, And I mean, there were people stealing stuff from, like, 7-Eleven, getting thrown in jail for life, And all these minor drug charges. I met some homeless person the other day, and there's a lot more homeless people around now. I don't know how they get away. It was a charge of a marijuana charge, and it was a felony on his record, and he's living in the park, and he can't get a job because usually they won't hire you if you have, and he has to get a drug test every month, and then he can't get money. He can't get certain food stamps because he's got a felony. So the poor guy is living, what do you do with, can't we get it? So what if maybe the guy had a few problems, but he doesn't deserve a life like that, Not in this country. Our impression of America is that we should be helping people, but we don't, And I'm sure he'll get ill and die at a young age if he doesn't if he doesn't get some help.
Right. Right. Now it's the system out there isn't really designed to support anymore. Even though there are those that claim that, yeah, there's people that are on welfare and they just, you know, taking the system down and things of that sort. But when you really look at the ones who get into trouble, that one is just as hard to get, you know, out and away from as any of them. Because,
yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, we all can understand, you know, the difference between a serious felony and a crazy person that kills people, and a person who steals, you know, something because he's poor. I mean,
right.
All right. You don't like stealing. I mean, you're not going to ever say stealing's right, but sometimes circumstances make things, you know, change your attitude. Like, I'm starving. I may have to get a sandwich, you know, and I'm sure there are people out there like that. You know?
Okay. Now to bring this back around to this Vatican thing, and I've interviewed Kevin Annette several times, and mm-hmm. obviously it looks like you have too, right?
Oh yeah. I'm more than several. I've known him for years. Yeah.
Right. And so you have a situation where he's really bringing some attention to the light of what has happened among that church and among the priesthood in what's happened to the people that, you know, fell under this.
The genocide of the Canadian natives as well as the American natives here, the same story exists here. And I interviewed Ken Bearchief, who's an investigator for the Tamaki Law Firm, who is proving the same thing that Kevin Annette is proving went on here at these residential schools in Canada and the mission schools here, and how these church organizations work together with our government to basically genocide our natives. And that's what he's been involved with for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a sad story. And, you know, that's when I really stopped my radio show for a while, because I got so frustrated with people. Here is a story that, man, if you don't get onto this, I mean, I interviewed a couple people that were killed because of this. I remember interviewing a girl that was, she was a native that was abused in Canada by these priests, and she was on she was out there discussing it, and the next thing you know, she was dead. I don't know if she was in a car accident or something, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and then a couple other people that Kevin would interview with me, they were gone. And so when I started really looking at the story, I said, look, if you people can't get behind him and you stop supporting these people, you know, and you can prove that our government was in bed with the Vatican and all these other churches doing this stuff, and you still support them, and you don't listen to this, you don't think it's important, and I can't get this on any big station or anywhere, I don't want to be involved anymore. I mean, that's it. I mean, that was the straw. And I finally came back. I'll do a show once a week or something. But that really hurt me a lot, because I never saw a more dedicated and more documented story than this. And it, right. I mean, there's been a lot. In America, I found the same thing. I mean, this law firm proved the same thing going on at our native schools. Right. And just settled with, there was a big, huge settlement, a Jesuit. Did you hear that on the news? Hell no. It was one of the largest settlements ever in our country against the Vatican and the Jesuit order. And that was just settled in Washington.
And you know, the curious part to that that I would like to do is, you know, to follow the money and how that ends up in the end, because sometimes you hear about these cases, but they don't necessarily come to the fruition that looks like it was going to for the people that were involved. So
yeah, there's a lot more to look at it, but you know, that's what I'm getting at. That story really. And it's still out there. I mean, Kevin goes to Rome and protests mm-hmm. there, and he's doing other things
right.
in Canada, as well as this group here in America, showing the same genocide of these children at these schools and why they were set up and how the government, along with the Vatican and other major churches, work together. I mean, when it gets that bad, and we can't live up to it, and you know it goes on today and in many other different way. I mean, how do you support a group like this? How do you even support your own government anymore? I mean, there's a time you just throw in the towel and you go, if this story can't get around, what else are you going to, what are you going to worry about? A lone assassination of a senator or 3,000 people getting killed at 9/11? This goes way beyond, you know what I'm getting at.
Right, right. No, but I go through the same thing that you're talking about. I get kind of, overwhelmed and weary about this, and yet I keep running across people that have taken this on, and even though we feel like we're not getting anywhere, I realize I'm able to go out and talk about some of these things with people now, and I don't get near the flack that I used to get. Even if they don't agree with me, they're not giving me near the flack. In other words, the message is getting out there, even if they haven't picked up on
it. That's good, and maybe people are just getting fed up now. And when people get fed up, then they somehow listen, because they're just as angry as what seems to be somebody who's a conspiracy theorist or whatever.
Right. I commend you for, your work and hanging in there. I know that you've had a lot of ups and downs over the years, because I've watched it, and I realized that if I was at this trying to make a living, forget it. I was able to do things to make it possible instead of having to make it support me. So, I want to give your website, and that you do subscriptions, and that you are trying to make a living at it. So,
It's www.arcticarcticbeacon.com, and go there and give it a shot. But anyway, we're about out of time, huh?
Yeah, we are. And so thanks a lot, Greg, and keep up the good work, even though, we're still playing.
Yeah, well, anytime you want me on, I'll come on and talk.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot, Greg. Good night.
Okay, bye.
Okay, and that was Greg.